So today we're going to be talking about the parable of the rich fool. It's in Luke chapter 12, if you want to turn there. This is one of those unique stories that can absolutely stand on its own. But when we consider this story in relation to the teachings of Jesus that come before it and immediately after it, it becomes much more than just wise moral instruction. It really shows us the worldview of kingdom people. Remember, as much as we want to make the parables about us, they're really about the kingdom. And they show us the value of the kingdom. They show us how Jesus' kingdom reaches across the world into different lands and people groups. And this parable of the rich fool shows us the outlook on life that Jesus wants his kingdom people to have. It's there in the parable by itself, but it's easy to miss. But if we pay attention to what's said before and what's said after, in other words, the immediate context of the parable, then it really jumps off the page. So I thought we would start with the parable, and then we'll kind of pull back and we'll look at the verses around it. Sound good? Let's do that. So let's go Luke 12, verses 16 through 21. And starting in verse 16, it says, "And he told them a parable, saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." So I think we all understand what's happening here, right? We got a guy who's done well for himself. Jesus describes him as a rich man. And this rich man finds himself with a problem. It is now harvest season, and his land is producing bumper crops. And that sounds like a really good thing, but it's actually become a problem for him because his barns aren't big enough to accommodate such a big harvest. He's probably used to his land producing a certain amount of crops over the years, and so he's built his barns accordingly. But now it's more than he's ever had before. And as the season moves on, the land just keeps producing, and his solution to this problem is to build bigger barns. And he's going to build these new barns so big, he's going to be able to keep and store all of it for himself. He'll have so much food and provisions put back by the time harvest season is over that he'll be able to retire early, put his feet up, and tell himself, self, you done real good. So eat and drink and relax, because from here on out, every day is Friday night. And some folks will read that and think that that sounds awesome. That's how I felt when I first read it. In fact, we see some of the American dream in that story. This rich man has worked hard over the years. He's invested wisely. He's been very frugal. And now it appears that God is blessing him. So he's earned an early retirement. He deserves this. That's what a lot of us would say, because that's how a lot of us feel. Because we want to be the rich man. We want to have more than we need, and we want to have places to put all of it. We want to retire early and wealthy, just like the rich man. And so if he were here, we'd probably tell him, that's a good plan, sir. Those bigger barns are a great idea. That's what I would tell them. But if Jesus were also here, what would he tell the rich man? Well, we know what he'd tell the rich man, because he says it in verse 20. He would tell him, you are such an idiot. I mean, he goes right at him. He says, you fool. Tonight your soul will be required of you. In all these things that you've worked for, all these preparations you have made, who gets to enjoy them? It's funny, this goes way back to the writer of Ecclesiastes, the great Qoheleth, the preacher, the son of David. He answers that very question. He wrote in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 18, I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. According to Jesus, this is what happens to everybody who stores up treasure for themselves but isn't rich toward God. But what exactly does that mean? Well, let's look at the first part, storing up treasure for ourselves. And I know a lot of you are thinking, Mike, you got nothing to worry about there because I ain't got no treasure. And I get that. Believe me, I get that. But I don't think that us not being rich like the man in the story lets us off the hook. And I want to try to explain that. Money is a tool that God uses to test our trust, so that he can show us what our trust is actually in. And that's a real important thing to know, because trust is the proof of faith. It's how faith is demonstrated. Because faith by itself is a noun, right? It's something. It's something we talk about. It's something we learn about. Hopefully it's something that is actively growing and getting stronger in all of us. But the only way that happens is through trusting. I can stand up here and tell you guys that I have great faith. I have mountain-moving faith. But I can't prove that to you by standing up here and talking about it. The only way faith is proven is through trusting. Have any of y'all ever done one of those trust fall exercises? I don't know, maybe you work for a company that likes to force you into those awkward team-building experiences. Well, the trust fall exercise is big in those things, from what I hear. They talked about doing this for our department at the hospital, and I warned them. I said, some folks are going to end up with concussions if y'all do that. Because what happens on a trust fall exercise is where you stand on an elevated platform, and then your back is towards your coworkers or your teammates or whatever you want to call them, and you fall backward, trusting that they will catch you. That's where the concussions come in. So you have faith that these people will catch you and you will not hit the ground, but that faith isn't proven until you fall backwards. Does that make sense? So the act of falling is trusting. So trusting is how we demonstrate our faith. In Proverbs 11, again, the great King Solomon, he says in verse 28, whoever trusts in his riches will fall. Not might fall, not is in danger of falling, but will fall. This rich man in Jesus' story trusts in his riches, not in the God of heaven. And that's proven by the fact that his solution to this really good problem is to build bigger barns so he can hoard everything for himself. So he can retire early and spend even more time focusing on himself. To which God says, you fool. This life you're trying to build, this future you're focusing all of your attention on, has robbed you. It's robbed you of purpose and fulfillment. You have traded everything that's supposed to be meaningful and lasting for things that are temporary and fleeting. And now, this very night, all of it, along with your very life, will be taken from you. Because he stored up treasure for himself. If you notice, Jesus never says, well, you just made too much money, Larry. I'm sorry. You just made too much money. I mean, you got to leave some for everybody else. He doesn't say that. Because how much this man has, how much he has acquired, has nothing to do with it. God gave him that. That is a blessing. That is a gift of grace. The issue is not his stuff. The issue is his heart. He has failed to heed the warning of Psalm 62, verse 10, that says, though your riches increase, do not set your heart on them. Did y'all know that of the 30 or so parables that Jesus taught, 11 of them talk about money? So about a third of them. And some folks say that Jesus talked about money more than any other topic, but that's not really true. That's kind of sneaky. It's certainly not true in the way that they're implying. I mean, Jesus does talk about money a lot, but it's often used as an illustration to expose a deeper heart issue, like in the story of the rich fool. Because money is the ultimate trust test. It just is. It's why Jesus says what he says in Matthew 6. It's part of the Sermon on the Mount. He says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So it's a heart issue, but the treasure exposes the heart issue. A few verses down, Jesus simplifies this as plainly as he can. He says, you cannot serve God in money. The rich man in Jesus' story, he served money. He trusted in material things and possessions. He thought the more he had, the better off he was going to be. And for people who are far from God, you understand that. But for people who claim to follow Christ, those things cannot be. They cannot be, because Jesus' kingdom is an upside-down kingdom. It's an economy supported by giving and sharing, not by accumulating wealth just so we can keep everything for ourselves. Because Jesus wants us to be conduits, not dams, okay? The blessings that flow to us from heaven are meant to flow through us to other people. Jesus doesn't want us holding back all of the blessings for ourselves. That's not why he gives them. Again, I go back to Solomon, the wisest human ever. He wrote this. He said, one gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give, and he only suffers want. So it's upside down, y'all. It's the opposite of how the world teaches us to think about wealth and financial prosperity. But should we really be surprised at that? I mean, God told his people through the great prophet Isaiah, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. And it's not just that his ways and thoughts are different. God says they're higher. They're higher. They're the ways of the kingdom, not the ways of the world. And while money is the ultimate trust test, it's not the only trust test. I want us to zoom out now and look at the surrounding text of Luke 12. Jesus is preaching to a huge crowd. Luke tells us in verse 1 that there were thousands of people gathered here. And in verse 8, Jesus is talking to his disciples, but he's starting to bring the crowds into the conversation. You ever done that? You ever been talking to someone or a small group of people and you talk loud enough so the folks behind you hear and they kind of come into the conversation? That's kind of what he's doing. He says to them, I tell you, everyone who acknowledges me before men, the Son of Man also will acknowledge before the angels of God. But the one who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. And you might be wondering what that has to do with the parable. Well, let's go to verse 11. And when they bring you before the synagogues and the rulers and the authorities, do not be anxious about how you should defend yourself or what you should say, for the Holy Spirit will teach you in that very hour what you ought to say. So Jesus is setting up the parable of the rich fool. He's speaking to the condition of the heart that leads to the issues he's going to expose through the parable. And right on cue, in verse 13, some knucklehead in the crowd yells at him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. So Jesus is talking to his disciples about their testimony, how they need to trust the Father with their testimony. Because the days are coming when things are going to get really bad. They're going to be outlaws who get dragged into courtrooms and made to answer questions. And Jesus tells them, I don't want you guys to worry about any of that. Because the Father loves you. And the Father is going to take care of you. And then this dude wants Jesus to make his brother give him his money. And I love Jesus' response. He goes, bro, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? In other words, why in the world would you ask me that question right now? And since Jesus has his full attention, along with everybody else's, he speaks right to this man's heart. He says, be careful. Be careful. You need to purge this greed from your heart. Because life is not found in abundance of possessions. And then Jesus goes right into the parable. And then he gives the parable, and then he comes out of the parable in verse 22 with, therefore. In other words, now that I've told you all of that, I'm going to tell you this. Don't worry. Do not worry. Do not be anxious for anything. Don't worry about your life, what you're going to eat. Don't worry about your body, what you're going to wear. For life is more than food and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Jump down to verse 29. And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things. And your Father knows that you need them. But seek His kingdom. There it is. The kingdom. Seek His kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. You know, the rich man in Jesus' story comes off as pretty greedy, right? He's trusting in himself, in his money, instead of his God. But why is he like that? How did he get that way? Is he scared? Is he worried? Did something happen back in the day that made him doubt God's faithfulness? Because that stuff happens. That stuff's real. The experiences we have in life shape how we think and how we look at the world, whether we like to admit that or not. In all of those experiences, we've all had those that in some way cause us to have doubts and make us afraid. If you haven't had any of those yet, just hang on, they're coming. I promise you they're coming. And even after we make it through those experiences, sometimes the memories of those experiences stay with us. We remember how we felt when we went through that. We remember what it was like when people said the things they said. And so we build walls and we take steps to make sure that we will never feel that way again. And one of the things that we do so often is we hold on to money really tight. And we build bigger barns just in case things don't work out. But while we're doing that, we're pushing Jesus further away. Because in our minds, we have decided that Jesus is not trustworthy. I am. Jesus is not going to look out for me. I have to. Of course, we'll never say that out loud. But we don't have to. Because those huge barns out back full of stuff say it for us. They scream it to everyone who walks by. I trust in myself because Jesus is not worthy of my trust. But then, you know, you got some folks who have never had a crisis of faith experience yet. They're just spoiled. They grew up privileged and entitled, and so they really honestly believe that they deserve a life free from difficult circumstances and unpleasant experiences. So either way, we all have the rich man in us. All of us. So if we think that given similar circumstances as the rich man, that we would never choose to do what he did, well, I think we're deceiving ourselves. I don't think we're being honest with ourselves. Y'all, Jesus may have spoken directly to that heckler in the crowd, but he was speaking to the heart of everyone who could hear him and everyone who would ever follow after him. Because if money is our master, Jesus will never be. He doesn't want us trusting in money or possessions or positions of power, so he speaks to the fear that's underneath so much of that. He says it so clearly in verse 32. He says, "Do not be afraid, little flock. Do not be afraid, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom." The kingdom. But as long as we hold on to worldly possessions and chase worldly pursuits, as long as money is our master, we cannot have the kingdom. And so Jesus, never wanting folks to doubt his intentions, tells everybody in verse 33 of Luke 12, "Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide for yourselves purses that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So is it wrong to have money? No, it's not. It's wrong to trust in money. It's wrong to hold on and store up so much that you need bigger barns to hold it all. That's what's wrong. That's what he's speaking to. Because thieves break into barns. Moths and bugs and other critters, they get into barns all the time. But a treasure in heaven is untouchable. It's untouchable. Being rich toward God will never allow you or your children to lack any good thing. But doubt and worry will steal our joy, they will impact our health, and they will cause us to put our trust in things that could be taken from us this very night. So y'all, being rich toward God might be a hard thing to define exactly, but I think we understand what it means because Jesus places it in direct contrast to storing up treasure for ourselves. So if we know what storing up treasure for ourselves means, take the opposite approach to that, that's being rich toward God. Being rich toward God means that we see Him as the greatest treasure that we could ever have. He is the pearl of great price. He is the treasure hidden in the field. And we're willing to give up everything we have if that's what it takes to have Him. Because that's how we get the kingdom. And if we have the kingdom, we have everything. That's what the rich man failed to do. Instead of seeing God's blessing of prosperity as a gift of grace meant to be shared and used for kingdom purposes, he saw it as a result of his own hard work, of his own successful planning. If he had seen it for what it really was, he wouldn't have told himself to relax and eat and drink and be merry. Instead, he'd have asked the giver of the blessing, "How do you want me to use this?" He'd have realized that this gift has come to him so it can flow through him. And by choosing to be a conduit instead of a dam, Jesus would have blessed him even more. Building bigger barns would have been the least of his problems. Because, after all, it is more blessed to give than to receive, right? That's what Acts 20 says. That according to Jesus, giving carries with it much greater blessing for the individual than receiving ever will. And that is the worldview of kingdom people, according to Jesus. I think that's a good place to stop. So I'm going to pray. Father, you are good. You're better than we are, obviously. Lord, you teach us things that are hard for us to receive because they're just so counterintuitive. But your ways are not our ways, and your thoughts are not our thoughts. And so, of course, it's going to be hard for us to get our heads around them. But Lord, I pray that we would see everything we have, from the homes that we live in, till the children we laugh with, to the breath in our lungs, as a gift from you. It's not because we're awesome. And we don't need to be awesome, Jesus, because you are awesome. You're awesome enough for everybody who has ever lived. And you want to give. You're a giver. You give life. You give the kingdom. Not barns that rot and fall. God, I thank you that no matter what we ever give to anyone or anything in this world, we will never come close to outgiving you. You are the ultimate giver, and you give so much, Lord. And I just pray that our eyes would be opened to see how much we've been given. And it's not just material things. Our minds like to go there first. But Lord, our families, our children, grandchildren, our friends in community, our co-workers, a sunrise from a deer stand, a sunset on a mountain lake. Lord, everything in life is a gift. We are the most privileged people who have ever walked because you have given us the kingdom. Lord, I pray that as we sing this last song, that you will receive it as an offering of worship. And I pray, God, that we would just love you, behold you, just sit in awe of you and your goodness. May your great name be praised always. Amen.